Hello and welcome to episode 82 of MMO Weekly, presented as always by Chitty's Cheesesteaks. I'm your host, Sal Manzo, joined by Sam Dykstra of MLB Pipeline. Sam, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I know we've had you on the show before. You're the man to talk to when it comes to the minor leagues, and especially want to talk to the Mets here. But someone who was in the minor leagues for a while, shone bright, and then made his major league debut on Saturday, Christian Scott. Obviously, he's the guy we want to talk about here. Great debut for the Mets, 6 1/3 innings. Obviously, the Mets didn't get the win, but, you know, shaky first inning and then really righted the ship and just looked like someone that the Mets are hoping could be someone to maybe anchor the front of the rotation, for the next few years. So I just want to get your thoughts on Scott's first start and just, you know, your thoughts on him as a minor league player coming up and now as a major league pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw over the weekend from Christian Scott is a lot of what we saw from him at AAA Syracuse to start the year. He had some starts, especially recently, in which he got into some trouble in the first couple innings and then really steadied the ship the rest of the way. It was really fascinating to see that same approach work against the Rays. I mean, you can kind of explain it as, you know, maybe some shakiness, maybe some nerves in the first inning, but by the third, fourth, fifth inning, he looked like a guy who absolutely belonged in the major leagues for sure. He was getting whiffs with his fastball, with his sweeper, with his traditional slider. I think he ended the day with 18 whiffs, which was amongst the most of major league starters on the day. You know, talk about what got him to this point. He's one of my favorite development stories, and I really emphasize the word development because you think of who he was when he was drafted by the Mets in the fifth round. He was a sinker slider type. And those guys, you know, they can work, and he worked out of the bullpen in the University of Florida. But over the last few years, especially last year, he took over a four-seamer, and his control really improved with that four-seamer. And then, as if that wasn't enough, he added a sweeper this spring, and you got to see that really come in on Saturday and look like, to me, at least a plus pitch. I mean, the way it was zooming glove side, the Rays batters didn't know what to do with it. So you add that with the more traditional slider and the fastball. And I think his splitter is pretty good as well. He didn't throw it a ton on Saturday, but it's still in his back pocket. It was a fun start to see. And, you know, now the book is out on him a little bit, and we'll see they've already guaranteed him a second start. Teams will be able to study him a little bit more, but he passed every test anybody could ask of him over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And today he was on Intentional Talk on MLB Network also. And just listening to him, you know, answering questions, seems like a very level-headed, thoughtful kind of guy, answer questions well, just was talking about, you know, how excited he was, just having fun out there and that sort of deal. And just seems like the moment wasn't too big for him and seems like he's ready to be up here. Can you talk a little bit about his makeup kind of like that and, you know, how that kind of fares here, you know, for the big leagues for him?
Yeah, I think the big deal with him, going back to that point about development, is you have to get pitchers who are going to buy into, you know, and have willingness to change their repertoires and their arsenals. You can go to a guy and say, hey, I think you should throw a four-seamer. And they may say, well, my entire life I've been a sinker guy. I'm going to stick with what got me here. And they can be a little stubborn. Christian Scott's not that whatsoever. He's willing to learn. He's willing to take on new pitches. And he has, like, not only just the willingness, but the aptitude to study up on those and really turn them into plus pitches pretty quick. Like I said, that sweeper was not something he was throwing this time last year, and he was using it to get major leaguers out just 1 year later. Sometimes that tinkering process can take years. He's really shortened that up, and I think that's a big credit to his makeup and his willingness to study the art of pitching.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really interesting too. And from everyone we've talked about the last couple of years, you know, as far as the developmental side with the Mets and now the last year with Stearns kind of being there and getting his claws into the organization, it's interesting to hear someone like Scott kind of take that and run with it. And you mentioned, obviously, he's got the three pitches, the four seamer, the sweeper, and the slider, like you mentioned. You mentioned he has a little bit of a splitter. I didn't see it much. Do you see, him being able to develop that kind of fourth pitch to be able to kind of set him apart? And like you said, he's guaranteed a second start. Hopefully there'll be, you know, a few more than that throughout this year. And teams are going to have more time to, you know, study him. So I'm wondering how important for him, you know, in his development now at the major league level to develop a fourth pitch, whether it be a splitter or a changeup, whatever else, to kind of have that fourth out pitch.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was digging into the data on him and I was doing the Mets list of our top 30 for MLB Pipeline in the offseason, I was looking at whiff rates and strike rates and all that kind of stuff on his pitches at AA Binghamton last year. And the changeup actually had a better whiff rate than his slider. Now, again, that was the other slider that he was using.
Sure.
And that's why he went to the sweeper, because it wasn't quite as effective as it could be. But I think this the changeup is still there. Like, there is something there that can get whiffs at the upper levels. He just didn't need it as much. When you have that shorter slider, it can work against lefties just as well. And if you're somebody who's leaned on that specific pitch for a long time, you're going to trust it in a big spot in your major league debut. I totally get that. But I think the pitches, I mean, he's really well-rounded. Just because he didn't throw it much on Saturday, it's sure. Not very much in his bag.
Interesting. It's funny you talk about like that makeup, like you're saying. It'll be interesting to see how he kind of develops and as far as uses that first start and kind of changes things up maybe for the second start there. But I am a little curious. You know, I think fans may not know as much, right, as far as pitchers coming up, so to speak. Like, what do you think as far as, you know, health aside, would be to expect to see him this year, like at the major league level? Do you think like you could see him getting 10, 12 starts this year? Do you think it'll be more, they'll try and cap it, you know, maybe around 10, like to wean his workload, so to speak? I'm just kind of curious, like what you think fans should kind of expect that, you know, his rookie year and like how long you can kind of see him for this year.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at how many pitches or how many innings he's thrown so far in pro ball, it hasn't been a ton. He was dealing with injuries, I think, in 2022. And last year, as much of a breakout season as it was 87 and two-thirds. So I think, optimistically, you would hope he can get to 120 this year. And right now, as we sit here, he's got 25 and a third at Syracuse, 6 2/3 over the weekend. So he's kind of already a quarter of the way there.
Sure.
You know, I think the Mets right now, they needed an arm. They had a major league ready arm.
Right.
You put them up in the bigs right now. You let them ride it out. That's a conversation they can have maybe in the second half of like, hey, let's ease up on the guy a little bit. But I, you know, we did some fun predictions at the beginning of the year, and we did one for every organization. And I thought Christian Scott would throw more than 75 innings for the major league club this year in Queens. And I'll stick with that. And I think he might actually beat that considering how quickly he has gotten there. You know, the fact that he's already in the bigs about less than a month and a half into the season.
That's all. And I think fans would love to hear that. I think that everyone wants to hear a little bit more than a little less there. to be able to develop and see what you have for kind of 25 and beyond. But that's a great thing. If you can get to that 120 mark, I think fans would be very, very happy with that. And obviously see how things go with the Mets, you know, kind of through the summer and into the second half. But I want to transition a little bit from a PO, pitcher only, to someone that does a little bit of both. There is Shohei Ohtani, and there's no comps there, but the Mets have, for now, a two-way player in their minor league system. Nolan McLean seems to be having a pretty good year to start. I just want to get your thoughts on him. Maybe if fans haven't heard about him a ton, you can kind of, you know, update us on the kind of player you think he could be. And more importantly, I guess, if you think that he's someone that could do the two-way thing, you know, long-term.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's super fun to talk about two-way players. Sure. And I don't want to, like, douse or you know, tamper any excitement down on the guy. And he's off to a fun start. Listen, he's got 8 of his 9 hits have been for extra bases. But he also has a 50% strikeout rate. 43% of his fly balls have been homers to start the year, which is pretty cool. Like, that is tough to do, especially when you're playing for Brooklyn, which is in more of a pitcher friendly environment. But that's not sustainable in any way. So like, he's putting up some fun numbers on the hitting side so far. But for me, the most exciting part of his whole, you know, scouting report is on the pitching side and, you know, having some conversations in the offseason about who people thought he could be moving forward. It was always pitching first and, yeah, we'll let him hit and see how it goes. And he's hitting like a guy who's going to earn more at-bats for sure. But he's got that slider that it's around 3,200 RPM. I mean, you can't teach that. Sure. That's really difficult to get that type of spin rate. He's got a fastball in the mid-90s. I mean, it's really exciting stuff on the mound. I think he needs double A soon. I think he's too good of a pitcher for high A. The problem is the bat's not ready for double A. Sure. So this is always the debate now. I mean, Shohei Ohtani is one of one. I totally understand the excitement of finding the next guy to do that. But it's so often that both of those skill sets are developing and progressing at uneven rates. And it's not fair to the bat to push it to double A and have him hit .125 with a 50% strikeout rate again. So I think decision time will probably come at some point this season. But hey, it's a fun first half story. Let him ride it out. Let him keep doing it. We'll see how far he can carry this power, because it's certainly in his bag and it always has been going back to college.
That's so interesting. And you kind of you answered the next question I want to ask you just as far as development. Like, since this is something that is really not there's no real roadmap for it. Obviously, Ohtani's a one-on-one player. You can't look at that. I just was wondering, like, how the Mets can develop that. And like you're saying, it seems like the pitching will outweigh the hitting. But I guess at some point, they'll have to make that decision, I guess, this year. If he is pitching that well, if they have to kind of sacrifice that to develop, him continuing as a pitcher to go up to Double-A, that's a good problem to have, I guess.
Oh, no, totally. And it's I feel like it's easier to get buy-in from players when you can point to one side and be like, here's how good you are. Sure. Like, here's how quickly you could get to the major leagues if we just focus on this one thing. And when you, like I said, when you have a slider like he does, when you have the velo that he does, it's very easy to project him in the major leagues, whether that's as a starter. I think it's probably going to be as a reliever, but a really effective one is something that he could be. So I think it's going to be easier for him to give up the bat, but I mean, if it was that easy, they would have had that conversation already. And he's trying to force the issue as much as he can. And, you know, good on him. Like, it's difficult to hit at high A. It's difficult to have 8 of your 9 hits for extra bases. Like, that's none of what he's doing so far has been easy. But I do think decision time is going to come at some point this year.
Yeah, definitely. That'll be really interesting to follow along and see how that progresses for him and what the Mets decide to do. So we'll definitely be checking that out. Before we get to a couple other players, just something I was thinking about, on the pitching side, obviously we know, what's been going on this year as far as with pitcher injuries in the last couple of years, really just kind of at an alarming rate at the major league level. I'm wondering if there's any data or anything you're seeing that on the minor league level too, or if there's things to the developmental side as far as, what's happening. Is essentially just guys' bodies can't handle, how hard they're throwing that long or whatever it is. I'm just wondering on the developmental side, like how that's kind of, if it's being addressed at all, or they're just, it's something that their teams are continuing, with their philosophies as far as how they want to develop pitchers, and they think that this is sort of maybe an anomaly for what's going on with the athletes and how hard they throw. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really difficult conversation. Like, everybody's trying to figure out exactly what the formula is. If there was a guaranteed formula to get a guy through a healthy season without having Tommy John surgery, everybody would be following it to a T. It's been a conversation in our circles of the first couple weeks of the season, whether it's AAA, AA, High A, what have you. A lot of guys aren't making it through 5-6 innings. That's just not something that's really done anymore because teams are being cautious. And yet you're still seeing Tommy John surgery happen. I mean, you can be as cautious as you want, but the human body is not built to throw a baseball 98 miles an hour consistently. And we're getting more guys doing that. I mean, I grew up at a time where it seemed like 95 miles an hour was fast, right?
Right.
And it's pretty commonplace.
Still is.
Yeah, it still is in some degree. But, the average at one point is 93, and it keeps creeping up because people are chasing that velo to get noticed and to get on, to get the next chance at the next level or to get to the major leagues or to get drafted in the first place. It's everybody's on that balance beam right now. And nobody has a perfect answer. So, teams are trying to figure it out, but nobody's got it perfect yet.
Now, do you think that – talk about things being cyclical or whatever. And obviously, velo gets you noticed, like you're saying, drafted, that sort of thing. We understand that. But do you think that maybe teams will start to go back in the direction of more pitchability and guys not pitching 100%? Listening to Gary Keith and Ronald, I listened to Ron Darling talk a lot about how they used to pitch at 75-80% when they had a – rear back and throw 100% to get a little more on their fastball, whatever it was, they could do that. I'm just curious if you think at this point, the way the sport's going, that velo is king and guys are always going to chase that now, or do you think teams will maybe kind of buck the trend and go back to that more pitchability over the pure velocity?
I mean, you would like in a perfect world for that to happen, go back to pitchability, because you would like to see guys go 6-7 innings and be true aces again. That would be awesome. It certainly helps the marketability of the sport when you have somebody like, Pedro Martinez guaranteed to throw every 5 days, or pick any ace in history. But the problem is, if you have a pitchability guy who's averaging 90, 91, guess what? Hitters are really good now. They're going to be able to hit that. It's not as easy to just say out there and throw strikes, and we'll just let you wear it for 7 innings. Like, teams don't want to build a loser that way. Sure. Like it would take an entire industry wide, everybody getting together and say, we're all going to guarantee two spots in our rotation to somebody who doesn't average more than 92. And that's just not going to happen. There's always a competitive advantage to throwing harder. It's something the sport needs to figure out. I don't have the silver bullet for it. I don't think anybody does. But yeah, it's a real point right now that everybody's trying to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing perfect. Like you said, that the velo is always going to be more of an advantage and teams are going to want that. It's just, it's hard to see so many quality pitchers at the rate it's going down with injuries. Who knows what the answer is. It seems like whatever team or network or show you're looking at, always someone has a different sort of answer. And like you said, there's no sort of magical formula. Everyone would do it. But on that note, talking pitching, another Mets prospect I wanted to ask you a little bit about was Brandon Sprout. And another name fans might've heard, over the start of the season, but for, folks that are not familiar with him, I'm just wondering if you can kind of give us a little breakdown.
Yeah, I mean, Sprout's really interesting because he was taken by the Mets two drafts ago, right? Okay. Like they had to go back to him and say, are we allowed to draft you? You can't draft a player twice in a row without their explicit permission. So Sprout signed that pre-draft. He said, yes, the Mets can take me again. And they ended up taking him in the second round. He's now at High A Brooklyn, like McLean. He's got a 0.92 ERA, 25 strikeouts, 9 2/3 innings, some control problems. He was up to 99 in the spring breakout game, which I had heard at some points in the offseason, like, this guy's already throwing velo. And I was a little hesitant about that just because it was early in the spring when college guys are playing games. So, yeah, he's going to be a little bit ahead of some of these guys who are geared up for April because he's used to pitching in February and March. But that's health, and that's really interesting. Then you got an above-average slider, a really good changeup. I would kind of like to see double A from him soon as well, in the same way we were talking about McLean. It's just the control needs to kind of come around. I wonder if he ends up being a reliever. He is 23 years old already. Sure. He's older than your typical draft pick. But he's doing everything well outside of that control early on, and that's really exciting to add him to that mix with Christian Scott and Dom Hamill and some of these other guys that are coming up strong at the upper levels of the Mets system.
Awesome. And the Mets can use as many arms as they could, right? Young arms. So that's great. Hopefully, like you said, little older there, but hopefully someone maybe that can kind of, get a spark and hopefully be in the big league sooner or later, maybe helping them out, which would be great. Last couple of points I had here, another player I was just wondering if you can kind of give us a little comp on a little bit of an evaluation. Again, another guy, Nick Morabito. Some fans may know him. Mike has talked about him on the show previously. But for folks that, again, that may not be too familiar, I just want to give a little breakdown on him as well.
Yeah, Nick Morabito was somebody who I kept on the top 30 this year. It was a debate whether to keep him on there because he is supremely athletic. Sure. He's a 70 grade runner. That athleticism is going to get you an opportunity at every level. It's just the questions about the bat. He was a prep pick. It's taken him a little while for that to come around, but you look at his start to the year at Single A St. Lucie, and he just got promoted to Brooklyn. So it's a good time to talk about him. He had a 25.9% chase rate. He wasn't expanding the zone much at all, which is a huge thing, especially for somebody with that little experience. So he wasn't beating himself as far as that goes. But if you look at the numbers and you get excited about them, you should know that he had a 63% ground ball rate as well. So he was just kind of – he wasn't expanding the zone. He was making good contact in the zone, but it was often on the ground, which works for his skill set, right? Like if you are a good runner, you can beat out some infield singles, especially at Single A. But he had a 508 batting average on balls in play. That's not something that's going to be able to be reproduced at any level. He might be a high BABIP guy moving forward, and that's certainly an asset to him. But I have some questions about how that bat's going to kind of translate to High A. I'll take somebody with a low chase rate. That's great. It's just interesting to me to see how that's going to move. The one thing I will point out, though, is that he had five bolts. Bolts are runs at 30 feet per second sprint speed. Wow. He had five of those for St. Lucie. Nobody on the Mets major league roster right now has more than three. That's Tyrone Taylor. Wow. And I think it's only Tyrone Taylor and Starling Marte who have any at all. Sure. The Mets aren't really a big speedy organization, but Morabito can be that guy maybe for them down the road.
That's really interesting. That's a really good stat. You know, speed kills, especially with these new rules in baseball. So totally, hopefully he can develop into something like that. That'd be awesome. And someone we had on the show when he got drafted, I believe it was last year, was a really nice kid, had, you know, good things to say. So we hopefully will see him, you know, contributing for the Mets sooner rather than later. But last couple of things I had for you. Luis Angel Acuna has seemed to struggle in AAA to start the year. I just want to get your thoughts on him. If you think he'll be able to, you know, Mets seem that to be concerned at all. They think he'll turn it around, just kind of more growing pains for a player. I'm just kind of curious there.
Yeah, Acuna, it's been difficult to kind of judge him, right? Because, like, since the trade, mm-hmm. he wasn't very good at Double-A Binghamton, but you can chalk that up to change of scenery, small sample, whatever you want. And then he gets called up to Syracuse this year. They get kind of aggressive with him because he's on the 40-man. Sure. He's got a 595 OPS in 29 games. And AAA, for the most part, offense has been up since the ABS system has been implemented. So it's been a below-average bat at AAA. Now you can look at it again that he's only 22 years old. He turned 22 in March. He's one of the younger guys at that level. He's essentially a college senior already playing AAA ball. Sure. He's there for the first time. He's allowed some grace. I totally get that. But, you know, there were compounding questions about his power. That hasn't come through so far. It's just going to take a while for Luis Angel Acuna to turn this around. We're getting to the point now where the sample size is big enough that he should be showing some improvement. It hasn't happened yet. I still think he could be a potential second baseman for them next year. It's just going to take a lot. I don't want to say a lot more power, but it's going to take some more impact with the bat to make that happen, especially with the 40 man. Now the clock is ticking. Like it's not somebody he's allowed years and years more of development. Now's the time to move.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting. Like you said, at 22 years old, you know, you hope that you could still get, you know, have him right the ship there and can contribute for the Mets hopefully next year. And, you know, someone, as we know, was a big piece in that Scherzer trade. So you hope it works out for him. But kind of to wrap things up, the last thing I had for you was I just wanted to get if there was any kind of not under the radar, but maybe a prospect that you've been following this year for the Mets that maybe fans haven't heard about that doesn't get a lot of fanfare or attention that you think people should be paying attention to this year.
Yeah, one who's not on our top 30 quite yet, but will be very soon because we're going to be doing some market corrections next week. And actually, I'm going to carve out a special thing for him because normally we don't update our top 30s unless somebody graduates off them or there's been a trade or somebody gets released. Sure. We don't do that until August, and that's when we do our full makeover of the top 30s. But this guy has been so good early on, and he's moved from single A St. Lucie to high A Brooklyn that he needs to be on the top 30 ASAP. So that's Jonah Tong. If anybody hadn't guessed that yet, watching at home, he's really fun to watch pitch because his fastball, it almost zooms upward. It almost looks like there's a fan underneath it. It's got 20.6 inches of induced vertical break, which I think was the highest at single A, or at least in the Florida State League this year. You generally think of like anything above 16 is pretty good. 20.6. So guys were swinging under that pitch a ton. And this is his fastball we're talking about. It's not crazy velocity. It's normally in the low 90s. But that movement, guys just couldn't see it very well at that level at all. It had a 48.1% whiff rate, which means when guys swung at his fastball, they were missing it completely 48% of the time. He's also got a mid-80s slider, mid-70s curveball, and a mid-80s changeup. So there's a good rounding of an arsenal there. But he throws from such an over-the-top delivery. I think it's going to be the curveball that's going to be his best secondary pitch moving forward, just to kind of get the verticality of the top of the zone with the fastball, curveball at the bottom. He can't beat a 0.00 ERA, and that's what he's got so far. But it's the swing and miss stuff that I think that gets me most excited. And they pushed him to Brooklyn because he needed the challenge. The FSL was no longer a challenge. And with, you know, the dynamics of that pitch and the analytics of that fastball, it's easy to see why.
Awesome. I love it. The more arms the Mets can develop, the better at this point. That would be great. But that's all we have for this week. We don't want to keep you all night here, Sam. But thank you so much for coming on. We'll catch up with everyone next week and update you as far as the big league club and beyond. But as always, let's go Mets.